Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Look, productivity is everything, people. We all want to be more productive. Most of us struggle at figuring out how to do that. On top of it, when times or things are uncertain, it can crush our output. I've brought in an expert today to talk to us a little bit about that. Now, before I get too far into that, I do need to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. With me today, I've got Dr. Todd Snyder. Now, Todd is a psychologist and a productivity coach. His company is Peak Productivity Psychologist, focusing on the inner game and goal acceleration for entrepreneurs. Now, scroll down to the show notes and click toddsnydercoaching.com. Straight out of Valparaiso, Indiana, Dr. Snyder, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Hi, thank you for having me. This is fun. It's not often that I get to talk to another productivity expert, especially one with a published book under his name. So I think I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Expert is a term that you are certified at, and I am on the outside looking in. I am certainly not a doctor, but my take on the subject was from my book Balance Me. Thank you for mentioning that, and we'll discuss that. Now, speaking of having real credentials and a backstory as a doctor and a subject matter expert, let's go ahead and hear a little bit about your backstory.
Sure. Well, it's not the traditional path that someone would take into the field of work that I'm engaged in. You know, I work exclusively with entrepreneurs, and most of the entrepreneurs I work with are in online businesses of some sort, whether it's scaling up in an affiliate-based business or working on reputation management or diving into something that's a little bit, you know, bigger, like e-commerce. I do have some entrepreneurs that I work with in real estate and house flipping and everything you can imagine. But as long as there's this element of it's a scalable business, then it's a potential customer for me. And so what I try to do is help entrepreneurs to discover ways to reach scale faster than they would with the typical ways that we get stuck in when we're thinking about how we want to grow our business. How I got to this point, I started out actually I discovered the world of psychology personally when I was about 15 years old. I think I was really struggling with reintegrating into the United States culture after having lived in Rwanda, Africa for about 5 years prior to that. So I was going through some culture shock. I was trying to figure out how to relate to my peers. And I kind of shut down and I just didn't really connect with people very well. And then I stumbled across a couple of books. One of them was Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. Another one was a Tony Robbins Unlimited Power book. And it just allowed me to, the core change for me was that internal locus of control concept. And I realized, wow, it's like life isn't happening to me. I can have a say in my mentality and what happens next. It changed my world so dramatically that I was like, what is this power? And I wanted to understand what happened to me. So I started learning more and reading more about it. And that led me into the field of psychology. I was like, okay, so they call this psychology. So when I went to college, I majored in psychology. And, you know, I heard that, okay, if you really want to go all the way, you'll do a doctoral degree in clinical psychology. And so I said, that's what I'm doing. So right after college, I went off to do a master's degree and then a doctoral degree at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. From there, there's a couple of hoops you have to jump through: postdoctoral fellowship, an internship in a hospital for a year. And then I set up private practice doing counseling. And mostly I was working with people with anxiety and depression and some marriage counseling type issues, relationship coaching. But gradually I got pulled into, actually, it's kind of a funny story. Speaking of productivity, I would be sometimes sitting in my office and I'd have a client who was sick or car broke down or whatever. They were a no-show for their appointment. I'd be sitting there by myself thinking, my family's at home, I'm not with them, I'm sitting here by myself. I'm not making any money. I'm just wasting my time. What am I doing? There's got to be some way I can monetize this hour when I'm sitting here. And so I started looking into online things that I had seen and realized, oh, I could publish an ebook. And so I published an ebook on social anxiety, which was one of the areas of specialty I'd been helping people with. And that kind of opened the doors for me. I started making some money from that. And then some other people saw that and asked me to help them with their info products. And I got sucked into the world of online marketing. Through that process, became a consultant to online marketers, helped to co-found a couple of companies in that space before I realized, you know what, these are my people. I just love working with entrepreneurs because they're working at a pace, they're sprinting instead of kind of moving really slowly. And I just really enjoyed working with entrepreneurs so much that I decided to refocus my career toward helping entrepreneurs. And the more I dig into that, because I'm a student of what I call active ingredients. So I'm constantly looking for what are the active ingredients of success? What are the active ingredients that makes the difference between one person trying to do something and succeeding and another person trying to do the same thing but failing? And filtering that out, I became more and more focused on productivity and how mood and mindset, beliefs, and even just simple high-level business strategies can make a huge difference. So what I do at this point in my career is I help entrepreneurs with decisions and then planning and then execution on those plans.
So let's talk about the planning part of it, because, you know, probably the world's oldest cliche statement about planning is that if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. But yeah, you know, entrepreneurs often do have the cart before the horse. You mentioned like the sprint, the run. And in my world of building tech and software, the term sprint is the actual term that we use to get from one point to the next. When it comes to planning as an entrepreneur, obviously you're going to have different elements at different stages. Like upfront planning for a brand new business is going to be significantly different than scaling a growth plan or just a lot of different stuff, or even in our case, like at Full Scale, we got to 200 employees in 2 years. And then all of a sudden we're like, wow, it might be time for a new plan or to readjust the plan, or perhaps you look up finally, cause it's been going so fast and you finally look around and you're like, oh wow, none of it went according to plan. So, you know, when it comes to planning in general, like what are some of the core pillars of getting started with that?
Yeah, I agree with you. It really, the answer to that question really does depend on where you are in that phase of development. There are some commonalities though. And one of the things that I think everybody should start with is it's getting really certain, a lot of clarity about the end goal, because so often we get sucked into the idea of creating the business and working in the business. And we kind of, the further you get sucked into that, the easier it is to forget what was the point again? What's the end goal we're actually going for? And the reason that's so important, whether you're just starting your business or if you are scaling from 200 to 600 employees, is because if you figure out exactly where you're going, what the end goal is, you start to become more aware of shortcuts. You start to realize we don't necessarily have to do it the long way where we gradually build up to that. You can start to open your mind to lateral thinking exercises where you may be able to leverage excess capacity and jump to that end goal much faster than you were thinking before when you were busy just spinning your wheels, you know, chasing after that dream, working really hard and, you know, taking a path that potentially could get you there eventually, but is not necessarily essential. I know, Matt, you and I were talking just before the show about that concept that you should hire experts rather than trying to figure out everything on your own. More and more, I have found that to be really sound advice. Why go out and try to develop the skill slowly and figure it out on your own, reinventing the wheel, when you could hire an expert sometimes literally for an hour at a time to tell you, look, here's what you don't know, or here's the question you forgot to ask in the first place, if that's your end goal. So if you come back to what is your end goal, I think that's just one of those foundational pillars that regardless of where you're at, it really, really does help to slow down your thinking around that topic, to create some space to ask yourself exactly what conditions do we want? And is there potentially a way that we could get there faster?
You know, I've compared the lack of planning to being in a dark gym and shooting baskets. You know, it's like if you can't see what you're shooting for, it makes it hard to get the ball through the hoop. I know you're from Indiana, so I used a basketball reference there. I lived in Indiana for 8 years. I know the Hoosier State's great love for the game. So, I think the end goal part is a key ingredient. Now, there's something that you mentioned that's I don't hear two words that I don't hear enough entrepreneurs use: excess capacity. I am a firm believer that, in fact, I've literally structured parts of our business and partnerships we have with other businesses around excess capacity. And in our case, at Full Scale, so we have a couple hundred software developers. At any given time, 5 to 10% of them are not assigned to a revenue generating client, which it literally puts them in the defining category that is excess capacity, because I'm still paying them. So we started investing that effort into other businesses, and a couple years later have invested roughly $1 million worth of effort and purchased equity basically in other companies. Now, will those pan out? I sure hope so, but you talk about these little things that stack up. Like if a couple of those companies grow really quickly, or if one of them exits or something like that, that's a big check that'll come back to us in a lot of different ways. And, you know, that excess capacity can exist in a number of different places. Where are some of the things, where have you observed excess capacity? Because I think a lot of people don't think about what that would or could or should be.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start at a really small example. In the world of online marketing, digital marketing, sometimes people say, okay, I need traffic. You know, how am I going to get traffic? And they start with this idea that I've got a website and I want to get people to my website. Where's the traffic going to come from? And they start trying to do things like building SEO from scratch. And they're essentially trying to, you know, tame the Google algorithm and make it push them to the top of the Google search results or something like that. Or they're looking at how can I learn Facebook ads, or how can I learn Google ads, or whatever is the latest thing that's working best. And one of the biggest insights I had, I actually learned, I think originally from an internet marketer, 15, 20 years ago or something, by the name of Mark Joyner. And he wrote a book, a tiny book called Integration Marketing. And I've helped a lot of entrepreneurs to execute on this concept. It's very simple. Why go out and try to build traffic from scratch when there are already websites out there with excess capacity of customers who are just perfect for whatever your website, your business, your e-commerce product, whatever it is, they would love to know about it. And so a great example of excess capacity is if you think about the thank you page on somebody's checkout. So let's say you sell fishing lures on your website, and I sell guided fishing trips to go learn fly fishing. And so, I mean, wouldn't it be great if somebody who's buying a fly fishing product on that thank you page, there's this unused real estate, online web real estate that says, thank you for your order. And that's all it says. Wouldn't it be great if underneath that it says, thank you for your order. And by the way, here's a 50% off discount code if you want to go learn how to do this live with our partner. And then that person gets paid a commission for sending a customer your way. And then you've got floods of free traffic from an existing traffic source. So that's just one example of leveraging excess capacity in a very simple way, where you say, who's already got the traffic? How can I tap into that directly right now instead of trying to build that traffic from scratch through social media or SEO or whatever technique that you're using?
Yeah. And, you know, that is a good example. There's a lot of, I've seen a lot of big box platforms, like for example, eBay. Mm-hmm. eBay shows Google ads now, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of different spots on the site. Now, you know, 5 years ago, they didn't. And now the thing is because of the high amount of traffic that they had, someone probably sat down and said, so, and I think a lot of those excess capacity decisions start with a little bit of basic data analytics. Mm-hmm. That you have a million. Well, my co-host and business partner, Matt Watson, you know, this is the CEO and founder of Stackify, and their blog gets a million visits a month. Mm. And yet a lot of those people are there to peruse different things, not necessarily what Stackify sells. So, you know, we've been talking a lot lately, how do you maximize some of that traffic? Because even a very, you know, 0.1% mm-hmm. that converts on a million visits is a lot. And, you know, I mean, there's probably, those things, it's easy to say, oh, well, that's only going to be a small amount of this, a small amount of that. I encourage entrepreneurs that are trying to get to a goal to remember to think about the jar of change that you have on your dresser. Many of us have, and you know, you put 13 cents in one day and $1.27 the next day and mm-hmm. whatever. And then at some point you take that thing to the coin machine and you're like, wow, $400 yeah. bucks.
Right.
And you're like, I'm rich. What am I going to go buy with this? I'm rich. But the thing is it didn't feel like much when it was 13 cents
right.
or $1.27. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those little things add up. Now we talked about productivity is and goal acceleration or achievement. And part of what I talk about in my book, Balance Me, is, you know, eating that elephant one bite at a time. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's really the only way we all eat. The elephant gets eaten the same way by each of us. And that is truly one bite at a time. When it comes to the plan and the goals you want to achieve, you have to break them down into small, singular, bite-sized actions. Otherwise, I think you are actually qualified to confirm this. While I'm speculating because I'm not a doctor, but the mind gets overwhelmed mm-hmm. when it thinks that we talked about uncertainty.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this: what are the things that overwhelm our thought process? Mm-hmm. Like uncertainty is one of them.
Right.
I think one of them is, like I mentioned, like, okay, people are like, I want to lose 20 pounds. Mm-hmm. You need to start by trying to lose 2.
Yeah.
You know, cause your mind can wrap itself around that 20 pounds or 40 pounds or whatever. Not so much. What are some of the other self-limiting conditions or stimuli or whatever? I'm sure you probably mm-hmm. have a better term for it.
Right. Well, there's a number of things working against us when we take on something as simple as I want to lose 2 pounds. And one of the first ones is that we tend to think with what Brian Moran, the author of The 12-Week Year, is a method that I really appreciate, kind of simplifies long-term goals, helps you to break them down into smaller and smaller chunks till it ends up on your calendar. And so I've become, you know, one of their certified trainers of their system. One of the things I really appreciate about that system, the reason I have adopted that into the work I do with entrepreneurs is because they take your 3-year goal and they say, let's break it down into a 1-year goal. Now let's break it into a 12-week sprint. Now let's make sure that we have process control in place where we take that 12-week sprint. You say you want to accomplish this by end of 12 weeks. Well, what has to happen by week 3 in order to get there? What about week 5? Where do you have to be? And you break it down. And so what are the tactics that are going to get you there? And then within your week, you say, okay, well, this is what's due this week of all those tactics that I broke down for my 12-week your goal, then if this is supposed to get done this week, then where on my calendar, which actual day am I going to put it on? And then once you're down to the day, you say, and which time today which 2 hours am I going to block off for that long-term goal so that it doesn't get filled with the administrative minutia that can just take over? Because if if you're like most entrepreneurs, speaking of kind of the limiting factors that you're asking about, Matt, one of the keys is that we live in the age of distraction now. Things pinging at our attention, it's just constant, never ending. And if you think about what you have to do to lose weight, this is the path I see a lot of entrepreneurs go down. I want to accomplish goal X. And so they start looking for information about it. Pretty soon they're signed up to a lot of emails, subscribed to a lot of email sequences about that. And then they've purchased two or three products about that. They've read one third of each one, and then they get shiny object syndrome, pulls them into the next one. And they're not really taking action. They're not executing on something. They're just kind of in this information overload. And so I think we're in a unique time in the development where, you know, we're kind of moving out of the information age. And it's because we're just constantly overwhelmed. It's like information, there's just too much of it. So now what we need is somebody who can filter that information for us and say, look, I've already done the filtering for you. Let me tell you the best way to accomplish that. So that's true whether you're trying to lose 2 pounds or whether you're trying to build a $2 million per month company. Whatever the goal is, there's an expert out there that has probably already walked down that path and can help you to get down that path much quicker. So I like to say with this concept of lead indicators and lag indicators, if you're trying to lose 2 pounds, you can't just say, okay, well, if I asked you to go do it right now, like go lose 2 pounds, people are like, well, I can't just do it. Like, what are you talking about? And that's because it's a lag indicator. It's an outcome. It's the result of other things that you can control. And so part of getting certainty in your business and being sure and having that sense of when you wake up and you show up in the office, you know exactly what you need to do to get from point A to point B. A lot of that comes down to getting really clear with yourself and your team about what are the lead indicators? What are the actions we can actually control that will lead to the lag indicators, those outcomes we care about? So going back to the weight loss example you brought up, if I'm trying to lose weight, I might track the lag indicator. I might put a little chart right next to my scale in my bathroom and say, okay, today I weighed this much and yesterday I weighed that much. And I can see incremental progress over time. But what's more important, if I had to choose between that and something else to measure, I would instead choose to measure the lead indicators, which would be, did I follow my nutritional plan today? Yes or no. And give myself a check mark if I did or an X if I didn't. Did I do my exercise?
I have a question. And because I'm not familiar with this term lag indicator.
Okay.
And that's new to me. So can we define that? Cause I think yeah. like, I want to hear everything about where you're going with this. Cause it's, yeah. I think this is really great stuff, but what are lag indicators? Mm-hmm. And what are lead indicators? And then I want to let you finish on all that because I think this is good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lag indicator is an outcome you care about, and there's a time lag before you realize that outcome. So if my goal is to lose weight, then I've lost 2 pounds. That would be the lag indicator of success. The lead indicators would be the things that lead to that outcome that I can directly control. Like, did I work out today? Did I follow my nutrition plan today? And so in the business world, you know, if I want to hire somebody, I might say, you know, the lag indicator is that, you know, these key results have been met. You know, 2 months from now, we have this person where we've given them a 10-star review on each of these 10 points that we care about for that position. But you can't just say, you know, having succeeded in that way is that the outcome. And there's a time lag before you'll get there. The lead indicator is, okay, how many people did we interview? Did we check their references? And there might be a series of those lead indicators that you can check off and say, we did those things that will lead to the lag indicator, the thing that we actually care about.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a helpful way of getting more clear about what you can actually do to achieve the goals and the outcomes you care about in your business. So in the 12-week year methodology, you're going to be tracking both lead indicators and lag indicators. So if we say we want sales to increase by 30% this quarter, then generally we would say in a 12-week period of time, then what we're going to do is say, we're going to say that's a 12-week year goal. And we're going to track that each week. We're going to say, well, what are the sales numbers looking like this week? And how about this week? Because that does matter, but it's not nearly as important as tracking the actual lead indicators that will get us there. And that might be, this week did three people in our sales team spend at least 3 hours per day doing cold calls to, you know, new prospects. That would be the lead indicator that might lead to the 30% increase in sales revenue. And it happens the same way with big audacious goals, you know, kind of, I know that you guys take on in the app development space or any kind of software engineering. And then it also is going to happen on the personal level, you know, with saying, I want to improve my relationship with my kids. Well, that's a lag indicator. There's going to be things that lead to it. And if you get clear about what they are, and then you track it, you're measuring whether you follow through, that creates the certainty that helps you to stay motivated because you see a direct link between the lead indicator and the thing you want. Then it's not just show up at work and work hard and just kind of hope. Instead, it's like, no, I know it. Like this thing, if I do it, it's going to lead to the outcome I care about.
You know, the one thing that I find so interesting, and I mentioned before we hit record, because, and for those of you listening, we take a solid 3 minutes before every show to prepare the quality that we then broadcast worldwide to 190 countries. And thanks for listening, but kind of joking about that. But what, you know, one of the things is I've recorded close to 400 podcasts, which means 400 conversations on different topics with different people. And you know, so much of this stuff it's got different labels on it. But really in the end, you know, success, and I said this in my book Balance Me, success requires payment in advance. And that's one thing that I have really learned, and that it does, and that payment in advance, and that's the stuff you're talking about, is in some of these cases, it's those lead indicators. You know, like you're going to have to practice, you're going to have to plan, you're going to have to show up and do it. Right. You know, and it's not luck. And, you know, we've had people on the show, they're like, well, I was an overnight sensation 8 years in the making,
right?
You know, and that's just joking. Cause like, hey, I was trying pretty hard before anyone knew who we were,
but yeah.
You know, these lead, I like the lead indicators. And so much of that, I talked about that in Balance Me, cause it, you have to start by defining exactly what you want. So in my take on it, I say, okay, you get 100% of your own effort. Does it go in your personal life, your physical life, or your professional life? Mm-hmm. And people would say, there's always one smart ass in the group that's like, well, I go 110%. All right. Mm-hmm. So in this one, you get 100% still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, so someone says 30, 30, 40, whatever the categories are. And then you say, well, where do you really want to put your effort?
Mm-hmm.
Because where people put their effort and where they want to put their effort are often wildly different. And you mentioned like, hey, I want to spend more time with my kids, or I want to do, okay, so that's your personal life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all these things have a direct effect on each other, because if your physical life is suffering, it makes it very difficult to work or your personal life. I mean, obviously, an illness can come up when you have a lot of stress in your personal life, or maybe all you do is work. So all these things are intertwined, but it is a simple identification. And when I say like different labels on these things, whether you're trying to accomplish something in your personal, your professional, your physical life, these lead and lag indicators, as you define them. So in my take on it, and like I said, often this is what I find so fascinating about discussing these type of things with different professionals, because they really do have a correlation. A lot of this stuff is in the different box. Oh, yeah. And there's a different Absolutely. Take on it.
Right.
And the thing is, as you mentioned, active ingredients. Hmm. Hey, look, I don't care if you're reading the 12 week this or Balance Me, yeah, or something else. If it's an active ingredient that works for you, and it's healthy and it's not weird, like don't go join a cult.
Right.
But you know, if it works for you and it makes sense, then yeah, those, and according to your system as well, those, if you find the active ingredients that bake your cake, mm-hmm, then turn the oven on. Am I right in that regard?
Exactly. Yeah. The concept of active ingredients really struck me one day when I was in a drugstore looking for, my wife was having a hard time sleeping or having insomnia or something. And she said, hey, can you pick up Benadryl? I forget what she said. I think it was probably Benadryl. And I was looking at the ingredients of things. This was when I was in grad school, and every penny would count at that point in my life. And I noticed that there was these sleep aid medicines there. And I looked at the back, and it's like the active ingredient is diphenhydramine, which that's just Benadryl. That's the generic drug name for Benadryl. And then I looked over here at the, like, the allergy relief stuff, and it was one third the price. And I looked at the back, and the active ingredient is diphenhydramine. And so, you know, it's the exact same active ingredient. It's just one costs three times as much because it's marketed as sleep aid. There's an increased chance people are going to overdose on it. People are less likely to overdose on allergy meds. And so, you know, when you think about it that way, it's kind of like, it would be silly for us not to ask that question with our effort. You know, what is the active ingredient of my effort that's going to generate the biggest result? And of course, coming back to, you know, how terms people like to use, that Pareto's principle is probably the one, or the 80-20 rule, as some people call it. That is so critical. It becomes increasingly important the deeper you go into business. And I think a lot of people forget that we've got to, if you really want to be productive, you want to be certain about how you're going to get from point A to B, point B, I would say there's really two critical things. One is get really clear about what your unique talent is, what your unique ability is that would be very, very hard to replace in your company, and try to increase the percentage of your time you're doing that, and then leverage excess capacity to accomplish everything else. You know, whether it's the bookkeeping, or if it's, or if you're at a much higher level in your business, and now it's about hiring managers to hire managers, hiring managers to manage managers, you know, regardless of what the scenario is, just do an audit of what, where you're spending your time, and make sure that you are leveraging the excess capacity of brilliance you have in one particular area, and outsource the rest to somebody else, or insource to your team, or outsource outside your team.
Well, speaking of outsourcing, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. I'll go into this, and I'm really fast. I think this, the lead and the lag indicators is really a key component here as well. And I know we're kind of we're hovering around that, but there are reasons why you are or are not getting what you want out of life. Mm-hmm. And by being able to identify, as Dr. Snyder says, the active ingredients that are working for you, the lead and the lag indicators, like, you know, I love the planning. Hey, if we want to hit this sales goal, we need to have salespeople that make 3 hours of cold calls. They need to do 2 hours of research. They need to do this. They need to do that. And they need to do that. And you have to look at these things on a very, very, like, and not 12 weeks later. Oh, well, 12 weeks later, we get it. Mm-hmm. You got to look at it like on a daily basis. Now, every day is going to have a different mix because things come up. Like, one thing that I can tell you is that nothing ever really goes according to plan. The plan's a great idea. We love quoting Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. Everyone had a plan until they got punched in the face.
Yeah.
And that's the way it goes. And every day as an entrepreneur, you get punched in the face.
Right.
It's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
So the thing is like the most successful entrepreneurs I know are either are the kind of people that just get punched really well, mm-hmm. and they can just take a punch. And then some people mm-hmm. are really good at getting up from the mat. And then some people are really good at avoiding the punch. And I think in many cases, like, which are you? You know, what kind of fighter are you when it comes down to it? Right. Like me, I can get, as an entrepreneur, I can get punched over. I can do all of them. I can avoid the punch. I can get up off the mat. And I can also just take a blow. And that's kind of rare. But one of the things that, and I'm realizing here in this conversation, I need to do a better job of, is truly putting up the mental red flashing light when the lag indicators are showing up. And these are the things that are going to slow you down. And I think one of you hit it on the head earlier, just simple distraction. That push notification, turn your push notifications off on your laptop.
Yeah.
You know, that little flag that's showing up in the upper right-hand corner, or the lower tray. It's like, you have a new email. Mm-hmm. Guess what? It'll still be there in 5 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it probably didn't need an urgent or immediate response.
Right.
You're
worse off if you respond quickly to your emails. This is something that has been tested and shown to be true, that the faster you get to inbox zero, the faster your inbox will refill. And so that's where it's critical. If you're going to do a specific tactic like the one you just described, you've got to make that mental commitment, that pre-commitment to yourself, to say, I'm not going to respond to these emails just to then be distracted by them again. Have a time in your day once in the morning, once in the evening, when you check your inbox, and use an app like Boomerang for Gmail that hides everything from your inbox and only delivers it once per day instead of, so then when you go into Gmail to send an email, you don't get distracted by the subject line of a new one that says, hey, I need your input on, and then you forget what you even went in there for. Maybe you went into your email to send a message, but instead you get distracted doing something else. 30 minutes later, you're like, what was I doing again? Oh, rats, now I'm out of time. And so, yeah, distractions are absolutely the killer if in this information age where it's maybe the information overload age that we're all in now.
I think another thing too is training and conditioning. Well, you can create your own environment. And some of that is training and conditioning. So I have a thing that I have what I call the rule of yes. Mm-hmm. And I license and encourage all of my employees to follow this, because people often want to ask, if you think I'm going to say yes 90% of the time, I want you to just do it and not ask, and I'll deal with the 10% of the time that you were wrong. Mm. And that is a necessary principle for me, because as I mentioned, with 200 employees, if each one of them requires 3 minutes of my time each day, that's a 10-hour day every day. And I won't do anything else other than that. And look at the things you talk about, lead and lag indicators. Mm-hmm. How many of the things that as leaders, we often put too tight of a grip on certain things. And, you know, you got to start to trust the people that you hired to do certain things. And like I said, that rule of yes is like, if you think I'm going to say yes 90% of the time, just do it and don't ask. Yeah. And I've been doing that for about 5 years. And it's been crucial. Like it's a really helpful thing when it comes to my own time and my own productivity, because most of those things you were going to say yes to anyway. Another thing too is if you work around other people, you often have someone that wants to stop and ask every time they have a question, and just simply ask some of those people, say, you know, can you consolidate this and ask me all at once? Mm-hmm. Because it's usually like five to 10 minutes worth of stuff at best, that it might be six different items. But if they ask you six different times, now you got to multiply that. You got to start to look at things on a scalable level. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned having 200 employees, and in that scenario, I need a week's worth of time every day. So some of these things around you, you can really condition the environment and the people you work with to be more productive by just simply licensing them and encouraging. When I say licensing, that's like me saying, hey, Todd, look, you're good at what you do. You're a smart guy. I want you to just make these decisions and tell me about them. Tell me about the results.
Yeah.
Now that's really difficult for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
It's difficult. We just don't want to trust that anybody could possibly be smart enough to make the critical, simple decisions that we make, you know? And like I said, most of that is common sense stuff. So taking something like that rule of yes, I'm sure there are other things related to that. Sitting in my office came up with that, and I was like, God, I need to just get 90% of the time I say yes. And I think these folks that work with me now, where you don't want to let that get out of control is, can I come into work 2 hours late every other day, unannounced and unplanned? That is not a rule of yes kind of thing. A rule of yes is, can I go to the store and buy paper because we don't have any?
Right. Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Is, you remind me of that classic example from Tim Ferriss of empowering his customer support team to solve a problem without asking his permission if they can do it in $200 or less or something like that. If it costs less than $200 to the company to solve this without asking me, then just do it. And so that reduced the total number of requests of, do I have permission for this? But even maybe taking that a step higher or a step back, however you want to think of that, sometimes it helps to try to think of it as a situation where you want to remove yourself. This is a frequent problem I see as entrepreneurs are scaling up their business and growing, is they'll hire people until they get to a point where they are the hub for everybody. Everyone reports to them. And then it's kind of like you said, you've got 10 hours a day of just answering people's questions. So to some extent, what you might want to do when growing a business is, instead of always making people report to you directly, is treat your own business almost like an MLM in a way. You know, it's like whoever you hired, that you're one of my clients calls them his generals. You hire your two generals right under you. They hire their people right under them. Those people have others working under them. And so you have that chain of command, and it's important to diagram that, create an org chart and say, if you have a question of whether you're supposed to do this or not, this SOP or this diagram will show you who's the correct person to ask about that. Can reduce a lot of that. In fact, two or three weeks ago, one of my clients was working on this directly with some app developers that he hires that work remotely. And he was so frustrated with how they would come to him repeatedly with just little simple questions that they could have figured out on their own. And so what we did is we created an SOP that they have to follow before they can ask him a question. And it has stuff that is so just, it would make you laugh if you saw it. Like, did you think about the solution yourself yet? And if so, you know, is there a reason why you think that he would disagree with the solution you came up with? A lot of that's a fear of being told that you made a mistake. And so his part, the business owner's part, was empowering them, telling them, hey guys, I'd prefer that you preserve my time and make a mistake instead of the other way around. If you want a good performance review, that's what you have to do. And so I'm going to actually start keeping track of how many times you ask me stuff. And then, like you were saying, Matt, there is a check-in once per week or once per 2 weeks, depending on the employee. What decisions did you make that you didn't ask me about at the time? And they just go through those, you know, 12, 15 decisions. And then he gives them feedback so that they can calibrate their decision-making to better match what he would have done in those situations.
Well, the world of just the connected world that we live in, you know, I mean, literally all 200 of my employees can message me on Slack at any time if they have a question. Now, that doesn't mean they do. But if you are getting messaged from employees and other people and you're commonly asking yourself, is this something Google would have answered instead of me? Then you need to do exactly what Todd just said there. And, you know, like, I mean, cause think about it, people that we just get impulsive, you know, and it's so easy to just chatter it into a box and, you know, and hit send. And, you know, did you really need to ask the CEO of the company something that Google would have told you in the same amount of effort? And, you know, these things, you know, you got to spot and try to eliminate these things because they get contagious and they become very habitual in some companies. And, really are the enemy of achievement and productivity and honestly sanity on so many days. Like so many of those things, you know, it's like I have literally found myself replying, did you ask Google? You know, like, and well, I mean, it just happens. It's, yeah. I mean, it's not great. Uh-huh. It's not great. But I mean, on some of those, you know, it's like a reasonable question. Like, do you know how to do this in Excel? No, I'm not that little paperclip guy from the 90s that everyone hated. Someone else that they hate for different reasons.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so once again with me today, I've got Dr. Todd Snyder. Go to toddsnydercoaching.com. Scroll down and check out the links. The link in the show notes. You can learn a lot of great stuff. Now, as our time here comes to an end, we do the Founders Freestyle at the end of every episode of Startup Hustle. So I'm curious about what's the best advice that, and by the way, before I ask that, for those of you listening, you know, we have had some very fun and active conversations in the Facebook Startup Hustle chat, which at one point was a decent community and now is beginning to thrive. So come join us there where you can discuss many of the topics that come up from the episodes. You'll find many of our guests, all of our hosts in there. And we have some different discussion material that we come up with, mainly posting some different cards that ask some questions such as, Todd, what's the best advice you could give to an entrepreneur?
I love it. So if I was going to just choose one thing, I would say slow down to speed up. And the best way to do that is to spend time making sure you're absolutely certain about where you're going. So if you can get those, if you can get that flow state, you know, if you're familiar with the work of the psychologist, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, he opened up the world with the research that has subsequently exploded since then, in the last 15, 20 years, about this flow state engineering, where you purposely get yourself in a flow state where, if you believe the research, our productivity can be up to 5 times higher when you're in a flow state compared to when you're not. And one of the best triggers of flow, there's multiple triggers for flow. Some of them have to do with like physical action sports, you know, downhill skiing, where there's this element of your life is at risk if you make a mistake. We can't really bring some of those into the world of our office as an entrepreneur, but there is one, and that is clear goals. If you have clear goals, it can activate that excitement. You chunk it down, like Matt was saying earlier, it's so important. If you can take your clear goals and chunk them down, then you've got a little race. You've got this little goal to go for really fast, to drive towards that. And that creates that feeling of it matters. And that helps to activate the flow state. Next thing you know, you're just loving your work. You're accomplishing more faster and you're making progress towards something that you slowed down enough to think about, what is the end result I'm going for and how can I get there faster?
I think that's great input. And, you know, I have so many notes from today. You talk about just trying to get a little better. I have purchased a new notebook that I am using just for notes from the podcast, because I realized I was having almost information overload on some days because I record a lot of these shows and I've got some notes there. Now, one of the things if we're answering, so what's the best advice I could give for an entrepreneur? If I have today, and this sometimes changes, but today, I probably have a top three here, but I'm just going to pick one. I'm going to encourage everyone to become great at one thing rather than attempting to become good at six. Hmm. And I think, you know, I spend a lot of time talking to entrepreneurs on and off this show, looking at business plans, doing a lot of different stuff, working with our clients at Full Scale. And once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io. Probably the most common issue that I see is people trying to do six things in the beginning. And it's like that common jack of all trades, master of none scenario. And, you know, you have, especially in the early stages, you have X amount of bandwidth. You technically have X amount of bandwidth at any stage of the business, but it's a smaller variable. Mm-hmm. And if you divide that in your own energy, your own focus and all of that, if you look back at the classic movie Ghostbusters, they could not defeat the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man until they put all of their streams together. And that's a bandwidth scenario there. You know, let's like focus on one goal, one outcome. And, you know, now you got to figure out what that is. And sometimes you get halfway to it. And you have to also have the discipline and understanding to maybe realize, this isn't the right path. And that's that pivot. That's that move. That's the agility that successful entrepreneurs also show. Now, it's easy to get confused. You look at a guy like Elon Musk that seems like they're inventing, building, or doing about everything from flamethrowers to spaceships. Yeah. While that entrepreneurial ADD exists and a lot of people do a lot of different things, you'll find that these people have still become great at one of them. Mm-hmm. The other stuff they kind of do on the side, maybe it keeps them entertained or something like that. But overall, I mean, that's my input for the best advice. So once again, if you're out there listening, come join us in the Startup Hustle Facebook chat. Looking forward to having a conversation with you about what we had a conversation about today. I'll see you next time, Todd.
Take care.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.